Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's one thing to contemplate the crisis at the U.S. border with Mexico. It's another thing to go there yourself to be of service to people in need. Sister Teresa Ann Wolfe is a Benedictine sister from Mother of God Monastery in Watertown, and she shares her firsthand experiences from her time in Eagle Pass, Texas, during a talk and dialogue that's coming up Monday, October 7th at 7 p.m. local time at the University of South Dakota. Now, she's joining us today for a look at the Christian call to welcome the stranger, the public immigration policies that impact lives, and the human experiences of immigration and detention on the border. Sister Teresa Ann, welcome. Thank you for being here with us.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, you certainly approach this from a scriptural viewpoint. When you look at the conversation around immigration and refugees, what part of scripture has the most meaning for you?
Well, for me, it was Matthew chapter 25, those verses beginning with 35 that said, "For I was hungry, and you gave me food," and goes on to say, "I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. Truly I tell you, just as you did it for one of the least of those who are members of my family, you did it to me."
How do you think that speaks to us today as you traveled to Texas to see what was happening there and to be of service?
Well, I think, as you said, there are many ways to approach this. You know, it's an emotional issue right now in politics and in our neighbors and churches. People are saying, you know, what can we do? I don't like what's going on at the border. What can I do? And so I thought, well, I can go and work firsthand and talk with the refugees and be able to put my experience of the gospel into practice.
Tell me about Eagle Pass, Texas.
It's on the border right across from Piedras Negras. It's considered a small town. However, the population is about the same as Watertown. So it's basically a city for me.
Right.
Most of the people are bilingual, or they speak Spanish only. And my experience that I cross the border almost daily, and many people there also cross the border for work, or for business, or to meet with family, or to help the poor on the Mexican side of the border.
So tell me what your work was like. What were your day-to-day challenges and duties?
Well, I worked at Casa Caridad, which was directed by Sister Ursula Herrera. And every day we received refugees and immigrants, those people who had survived 100-degree-plus temperatures, record-high water levels in the Rio Grande River, and grueling interrogations at the Border Patrol detention centers. So they came to us exhausted and grateful, you know, for the hot meal, for showers, for clothing, for shoes, for diapers, and other necessities that we offered.
What did you notice about... Go ahead.
Yes. When they came in the evening, and then in the morning, before they left again after a substantial breakfast, they left us on the next stage of their journey, amid mutual blessings and hugs and tears and thanks. Many told us thanks for the safety and the hospitality of Casa Caridad.
What did you notice about where people were coming from and why?
Well, the majority of the refugees came from Honduras. And they came because of the tremendous suffering they endured there, corruption on all levels, extortion, gang violence. Anybody who had a little business had to pay extortion to the gangs, and if they couldn't pay, they were threatened, and then they were shot. And if the father was shot dead, well, then the rest of the family knew that they would be next because the gangs would come to demand the extortion. And so sometimes after The head of the family was shot. The rest of the family would gather up their things in the middle of the night and flee, basically with what they wore and any money that they had. It's a tremendous tragedy of what is going on. Also, Honduras is facing the privatization of healthcare and the school system. And the majority can't pay, you know, the rates that you would pay for a private school. And so they can't send their children to school. Also, if they can't pay for their school supplies and their uniforms, they simply can't go to school. The children then are just deprived. They will remain illiterate.
Did people tell you stories as you talk about what a long and arduous journey it was from the geography to the violence they experienced on the way? Did you hear stories of people who didn't make it as far as you, people that the people who did make it, did they tell about those who fell behind or who were lost?
Yes. The people that who did make it, those were the lucky ones, and those were the ones to whom we talked. Because when people came across the border, when they crossed the Rio Grande, they either were picked up immediately by the Border Patrol or they turned themselves in to so that they could apply for refugee status. And so they went through quite a grueling interrogation, and those people who applied and who were accepted then for application, they were released to like the Methodist Intake Center and then from there to us. However, those who were not accepted for asylum, they were detained there. Basically, they were jailed and eventually deported. Sadly, those were the people we never got to speak to. And several times, you know, like a woman with her children was inconsolable. She was devastated because she and her children were granted application and were released. They came to our house. Her husband was kept at the detention center, and he would be deported. And she said they had left because his life was threatened. And so she said it was certain death, that if he would be sent back, it was certain death for him. And she was inconsolable. We talked with her. We prayed with her. We looked to see what kind of help we could get for her. But those stories are sadly all too common when people are not granted refugee status.
What were you hearing, and we've talked a lot on this program and will continue to do so, about policies and reform and, you know, Congressman Johnson going to the border to see what he could see for himself about border security. But you are seeing the people and how these policies impact their lives. And did you talk to people about the detention centers who had been there? Did you, you know, have any contact with people who had stories to tell about what those centers were like?
Yes, we, as is well documented, you know, the official policy is one of basically contempt for the immigrants. It's a culture of cruelty and callousness. And the administration's focus so far has been to block and detain hundreds of thousands of migrant families who are fleeing violence and extreme poverty. I don't think it can ever be excused to be herding people into tents and cages and warehouses, or to seize children and send them and their parents to separate jails. We have personal experience here of the suffering that this has entailed. In South Dakota, a few months ago, a family, a mother and a child, who were in a detention center in Texas, were forcibly separated. The little boy, 6 years old, I'll call him Jose, He was sent to some place all by himself in Michigan. This is a child, 6 years old, who doesn't speak English, who has never been to this country, and who has never been separated from his mother. He was kept in this facility for over a month. We tried vainly to get him out, but there was a lot of bureaucratic red tape. They would demand this form and then that form. And then they would say, well, you need to have this in by Friday afternoon. Well, then Friday afternoon, nobody was working. The office was closed. It took a long time for that child to be reunited with his mother. And to this day, that child suffers trauma. He is having problems at school. There's problems in the family. I don't know if he will ever recover and become a normal child. This is only one child. This happens to thousands of children.
I was at a town hall when Senator Mike Rounds came to town, and there was a woman in the audience who asked him about the caging of children and the separation of families. And I'll never forget her talking to him about how she could not sleep at night. And one of his responses to her was a conversation about children being captured by other people and used as sort of collateral to act like a family when they weren't really a family. And he was, getting at this idea of trafficking and deception. And how do you see that mentality kind of playing out? And then let's talk a little bit about trafficking and your efforts to address that as well.
Yes. Well, I think basically from what I saw personally, these were families coming across the border. They were mothers with small children, or they were family units. I saw very few people coming across, you know, adults separately when I was there. And I think to say that all of these children, or that the majority of children were used, to act as pretend children for other people, this is simply not true. And when you talk to the children, I mean, they know they came with their parents, with their mom and dad and other children, or with an aunt or uncle. That happens sometimes. If the parents were dead already, were killed, or could not afford to send all of the children, so sometimes the father comes with some of the children, the mother stays behind and comes later with the rest of the children.
I want to talk about the responsibility of our congressional delegation, our political leaders, in a moment. But first, I want to ask you, Sister Teresa Ann, about what you think our responsibility is as South Dakotans, as citizens, as humans, as a family of faith, as people who are non-believers. Before we talk about policy and leadership and your efforts in Washington, what do you want to say to the people who are listening right now about personal responsibility in this crisis?
I think, you know, just because the policies that are in place now are legal and are enforced with our tax money, that doesn't mean they are moral or that they are right or that we should tolerate them. We should not. We should protest vigorously, urgently, every day. This is a humanitarian crisis on our border. When anybody is deprived of their basic human rights, this is a crime against humanity. And in our country, if we do nothing to stop this, we are all guilty of collusion. And we will be asked to give an account of this. History will judge us strongly if we do nothing.
God
will ask us, what happened here? Why did you not do anything?
Tell me about your upcoming trip to Washington, D.C., and what you hope to say to our congressional leaders.
I want to say something first about, maybe I'll talk about that later, about, you know, the number of refugees that we will be expecting in the future. Now, As I said, we cannot pretend we don't know what's happening. We cannot look the other way. We can make, you know, donations. We can volunteer. However, one immediate, concrete, and practical thing that any of us can do is to contact our senators and representatives. You know, we need to let them know that we condemn the daily abuses and denial of human rights, you know, both at the border and in our communities where immigrants live. I have a letter right now to our Congress people circulating, and in part it says, in South Dakota, we see daily evidence of abuses and denial of basic human rights, both at the Mexican-United States border and in the communities where refugees and immigrants settle. South Dakota's economy, especially the dairy industry, depends on immigrant labor. To continually harass, threaten, incarcerate, or deport this hard-working, tax-paying workforce is not only morally reprehensible, it goes against our state's best interests economically and culturally. And because immigration reform happens on the national level, we urge you, our Congress people, to pass legislation that is just, that's compassionate, and that respects family unity.
Sister Teresa Ann Wolf is a Benedictine sister from Mother of God Monastery in Watertown. And Sister Teresa Ann, we hope to talk with you again about this in the future, and folks can come be in dialogue with Sister Teresa Ann Monday, October 7th at 7 p.m. at the University of South Dakota. We'll follow your work in Washington as well. And we really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.